You know what? It's been a long week. We tried to quit cigarettes, we played some underwater hockey, and we ate some mac and cheese this week. So as we do every Friday, let's relax a little. We've got a group of smart people with us. Let's kick back, unwind, and think about what the heck happened since Monday. It's time for the break room.
Your waiter. Great. Hi. Can you get him a new chair, please?
Sure.
Maybe this George Washington will make it come here faster.
I'm willing to let your child wither and die inside you if that's what's required.
All these big, cool, powerful guys are turning out to be, what's the word? Habitual predators?
Cat's out of the bag.
Joining us in the break room, Howard Franklin, a Democratic strategist. Natalie Pavelski is vice president of Cater Communications. And Greg Williams, mortgage banker, host of the conservative radio show Greg's List. And at any moment, we should be expecting Kalina Bowler, who we're told is in the building. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Friday.
Morning. Happy Friday, Celeste.
So let's start with the year 2017. Time Magazine's Person of the Year was not Donald Trump. Instead, they chose a group of people, the many women who spoke out this year about sexual assault.
Honestly, I was furious. I had a man grope me in front of multiple colleagues, and I was tired of wondering if it was something I wore. I was tired of wondering if it was a vibe I was giving off. And when I talked to other women, they were furious too.
Time's cover features multiple women who contributed to the hashtag MeToo. Included is a nod to the many anonymous women who named their abusers but didn't give their names, obviously. What do we make of this choice?
Oh, I think it was inspired, Celeste. I mean, we haven't seen this many powerful men held accountable for their bad behavior to women before, and it's remarkable. The only thing is, I don't know if this is just a moment or if it's a sea change. I hope it's the latter, but I'm not sure it is.
Yeah, I would echo that sentiment, Natalie. I'm not sure if it's more than, like you said, just a moment. I do think I'm happy it was not Donald Trump. I think it's hilarious that he tried to go out and say that he declined to be the person of the year. And I think in large part because of his bad behavior that was brought to light during the campaign, there is some Donald Trump in this person of the year.
Also, he got last year, so it's an
That's
interesting
right.
follow-on.
Yeah. You're rarely going to get 2 years in a row on this. But I think it's a lot more than a moment because we are seeing some a sea change where politicians and Hollywood are both showing their depraved side. And we're seeing resignations. A senator from Arizona resigned last night in north of the Phoenix area. I mean, congressional rep, sorry.
Yeah.
And Trent Franks is his name. And he resigned. His was a very convoluted story. But we're seeing the politicians and the Hollywood moguls disappearing. The Weinstein Company was sold, and we're seeing resignations in D.C. So I think it's got a lot more this moment's going to last a lot longer than just this fleeting year that we've seen so far.
Hey, look who's here.
Hi, everybody.
It's Kalina Bowler.
Yay!
Thank you for joining us, Kalina.
Thank you for having
me. Kalina, did you want to weigh in on this choice of for Person of the Year?
I love it. I think it was a great choice. And I wasn't sure exactly what was said earlier, but the Me Too campaign was extremely important, something that was
but
deeply personal for me.
They didn't include the inventor of the Me Too campaign on the cover.
Not on the cover, no, but she was, you know, profiled in the article, in the main piece. But, yeah, that was a little bit of a, you know, oversight kind of thing. But overall, I think the intentions were totally good in that way.
All right. Well, then let's talk about Atlanta specifically. Atlanta tried to elect a new mayor this week after a very, very close race. Keisha Lance Bottoms claimed victory.
When all odds seemed against us, you all stood with us. One Atlanta. As we stand tonight, united as one Atlanta.
Her opponent, Mary Norwood, lost by less than 800 votes. She wants a recount. But listen, in a city this large, less than 100,000 people bothered to vote. It was just abysmally low. Why can't we convince Americans to vote?
Well, in the local elections, they tend to have turnout levels much lower than the presidential, even though the ironic part is a local decision maker has a much more profound impact
effect.
On
exactly.
your daily. They're the ones, approving the high density or the low density housing, the new traffic projects, spending the money like on the Atlanta streetcar that are granted from federal money. So, I look at it as a little depressing that we have low turnout, but I would also rather have people that actually know the issues voting rather than just, masses of people going and said, well, somebody has the most yard signs out.
Hmm.
This is your business, Howard.
It is my business. I don't know. I was telling Natalie earlier that I lived in the Cayman Islands and ran a campaign for parliament. And in that country, voter turnout's around 90%.
Wow.
And I think some of this has to do with faith in the institution of government. Although they had scandals, they had, you know, corruption and theft, et cetera. This just last week, there was actually a committee meeting at the state legislature on replacing Georgia's 15-year-old digital or electronic voting machines. And some of that revolved around a conversation about paper balloting and whether or not that would give people more confidence. And, you know, so I think there's some things afoot to try to address it. But ultimately, you know, the democracy is definitely suffering when you've got such a small percentage of people who are engaged, whether they're, you know, Greg and I might disagree about whether or not the people who showed up are highly engaged or highly, you know, informed or not. But I think it is suffering.
Call me old-fashioned and corny, but
you're old-fashioned and corny.
I've heard that before. I think that the ability to vote is it's kind of a sacred trust. I mean, people fought and died so that we could vote. Look around the table. There are for a lot of our country's history, a lot of us wouldn't have been allowed to vote either because of our gender or the color of our skin, right?
All but one of us.
And it's very frustrating to me that people don't educate themselves and go out and vote. Now, to be fair, it is hard to get out if you're a working person on a Tuesday in the middle of the week.
That's why we have early voting.
But we have early voting, and the early voting is pretty extensive here in Georgia. The campaign did get ugly. I think that turned people off. I mean, I had toxic sludge coming through my mail slot every day. Mm. I'm the only thing I can think of that I don't know how to fix this. I mean, I suppose you could move Election Day to a weekend. But I think it's sad that we don't have
make
a bigger
a national
turnout
holiday,
here.
Well, with 3 weeks of early voting and then absentee balloting and then 13 hours on Election Day, I think there was no voter suppression.
Fairness, we had 1 week for the runoff, not the 3 weeks. And you also had Thanksgiving holiday smack dab in the middle of a four-week runoff.
Now let's move on to what is on a lot of minds in Atlanta, at least. Perhaps you remember a certain disaster in 2014?
It was something awful.
It was only 2 inches.
Well, this is the South, Sethery. We are not equipped to deal with snow. And I'm willing to admit I may have overreacted. For example, when the storm started, I preemptively shot my neighbor lest he raid my Costco stash. Yeah.
All right, a few years ago, 2 inches pretty much shut the town down. 2 people died. People are now reporting snowflakes falling today. Officials are telling people not to panic, but come on. Is Atlanta going to panic?
Of course, it's traditional. Run and get your bread. Run and get your milk. Cue the live shots from the grocery stores with the empty shelves. I mean, it's what we do.
Everybody still has the memory of being stuck when you had people that were stuck on the highways for 12 hours. My brother was stuck in it for a long time up in Cobb County.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting during that snowmageddon watching people kind of chiming in on Facebook, and they slowly went insane as they didn't move. It was like The Shining. Yeah. By the end of it, they're like, here's Johnny, you know, on Facebook.
I mean, if my absence right when the show started could it be any indicator about how people are panicking out there. I mean, I left where I was coming from early to get here on time, and I was still late because people were sliding everywhere and, you know, breaking, and they just couldn't handle some sleet.
Well, at least they're breaking. That's new.
I don't know what to add to that. I mean, it's I'm from Detroit. I learned to drive in the snow.
Oh, boy.
I don't even know what to make of it. I mean, and I've lived here 21 years now. It's never, this is the legacy of Snowmageddon.
Yeah, exactly. I lived in Detroit for 10 years and New York and Maryland.
I'm a Yankee too. I mean, if we get a big ice storm down here, we're just not equipped to handle it.
I don't stay off the roads in Georgia because I can't drive in it. I stay off of the road because I'm really afraid of Georgians who lose their minds. You know how to weigh in. If you want to be part of the break room, reach out to us. Find us on Twitter at OST Talk, especially if you're at home trying to stay away from the snow. It is Friday. We're in the break room. Just ahead, Robin Wright takes her turn as a star of the final season of House Cards, and tipping waiters continues to be controversial. This is on Second Thought. All I'm Celeste Headley. This is On Second Thought. We are having coffee and conversation in the break room, as we do every Friday, or almost every Friday. My guests are Greg Williams of the radio show Greg's List, Democratic strategist Howard Franklin, Natalie Pavelski, Vice President of Cater Communications, and Kalina Baller, host of the Credits podcast and survivor of Snowmageddon 2017. All right, let's start with TV. House of Cards gets a final season on Netflix. We wondered. Kevin Spacey will not be the star, though. After Spacey was accused of sexual assault by several people, he was dumped. Instead, the new season stars Robin Wright as former First Lady Claire Underwood.
Have you thought this out? Because when we go to court...
You mean 6 months from now? You're expecting in four, no? That's 4 months without the medicine you need. I'm willing to let your child wither and die inside you if that's what's required. But neither of us wants that. Now tell me, am I really the sort of enemy you want to make?
Claire Underwood.
Love her. Oh, I love it.
Pretty powerful, but will the show still be a hit without Kevin Spacey?
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
What do you really think, Kalina?
I'm so excited. I've well documented my love of House of Cards on this show specifically.
Yes.
And I loved how at the end of the current season, they already sort of set up Claire Underwood, the character, to be the one that takes the reins and wreaks havoc.
That's
and
true.
So it just makes sense story-wise that he just probably won't be around.
I agree with what they're doing, or I agree with your assessment of it, but I think the show has pretty much jumped the shark. I talked to my friends, and maybe I'm speaking for a very small subset of the viewership here, political professionals who enjoy the show because there are some parallels. And two seasons ago, we're kind of like, this is about as good as it's gotten, and it's on the way down.
I tried watching it, and when they killed the dog in the first episode, I was like, you know, I can't watch this show because I already have you know, working in politics, and in the arena, you always have a little bit of a nihilistic view on things, and I fear that getting into that show would really kill it.
I agree that it peaked, and I think it dragged a bit last season, but I am going to watch because I'm really curious how they're going to handle this, and also they're only doing 8 seasons.
Yeah.
I think that'll be a lot of fun.
And if they write off the Kevin Spacey, they may be able to intertwine the Me Too theme with that somehow, right? Just throwing it out there. See, I could write for the show and I haven't even seen it.
All right. In real life drama, the International Olympic Committee has banned Russia from next year's Winter Olympics. That's because of widespread, and I mean widespread, doping.
Mm-hmm.
In the last Winter Games, the Russian Athletic Committee has been suspended. Players will not be able to march under their flag in February. Some athletes might be able to compete not under the Russian flag, and they have to pass some very rigorous tests.
Mm-hmm.
What do we think here? Some people say the Russians got off too easy, or is this punishment unfair?
It makes it look like, you know, the Ivan Drago scene in Rocky IV where they're shooting them up right before the battle in Moscow.
Yeah.
They performance-enhancing drugs have been so rampant in the former Soviet Union republics and in Russia now, and you know, it's just, we've seen the tests have been able to catch up to the technology of drugs. Lance Armstrong got caught with doping. And it's just, you know, if you're competing with other athletes that are not blood doping or using PEDs, then it really throws off the character and the competitive environment.
And to be the home team and to do this, to host the world for the Olympics and to set up such an elaborate official cheating machine was just unconscionable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Big black eye for the country and for the Olympics, frankly. I mean, I don't know how they get around. This is going to be all we talk about and the pretext or the background of this entire game.
I don't think Russia's out, though, like out for the count. I think this is a fair punishment. I think that it was long overdue, obviously. But, you know, they're not there. Okay, they'll have a chance to redeem themselves. I mean, the Olympics aren't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. All right. So in restaurants, I mean, we all know. Be sure that you treat your waiter well, right?
Welcome back, gentlemen.
I'm sorry, do I know you, pal?
Never seen this man before in my life.
I waited on you before. You tied my shoelaces together, fell down.
I'm getting nothing. I'm drawing a blank on this guy.
Yeah, that means nothing to me. What are you saying?
A scalding hot plate of spaghetti fell into my face.
I'm to remember every man I've seen fall into a plate of spaghetti?
The Obama administration, there's an Always Sunny clip for literally everything. The Obama administration created a federal rule that prevented employers from taking part of their employees' tips. But President Trump has now rolled back that rule. What do we think here? Should waiters just get to keep all their tips? Should they have to be forced to share them with the cook? Should tips simply be eliminated?
They shouldn't be eliminated. If they did, if they did that, then they would have to clearly raise the wages up for the service industry. And right now, it's been caved at $2.13, which has been.
Well, why not pay them a living wage? Just to begin with.
Well, I mean, that's the argument, right? The waiters, servers make a lot. Most servers do. If you've ever been to a fancy steakhouse, they're making a lot more than $15 an hour.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
If you're good at what you do, you're going to make a lot more than what whatever the pre-programmed social justice warrior living wage is of the year. But I don't think they should get rid of tipping, and I think that the tip out, right, where they pay the cook and the bartender, that's just a part of the business. I don't think they should change what the current status quo.
I just think if you're going to – you can't have it both ways. So if we want to pay a wage, then we've got to acknowledge that a $40 steak dinner goes to being a $75 steak dinner, right? I think – so I don't really have a dog in the fight as to where it comes from. I just want to make sure that if people are getting taken care of, that it's coming from the right place. And that should be from the pockets of the people who are enjoying the experience. Mm-hmm.
I used to be a waiter when I lived in D.C., and I made a good amount of money, but I'm also a people person. Do you see what I'm saying? So I think that you have to look at the type of wait staff that you hire if you are a general manager of a restaurant. You also have to just consider that if you're going to go out and you're going to treat yourself to a night out, it's just expected that you need to tip, you
know,
the
service staff.
But what
we're really talking about here is the employer entitled to take those tips?
No.
Yeah, no, I would say no.
I don't think they are.
No, to go to waiter.
I mean, especially if they're paying the $2.13 now.
Exactly.
I mean, that would be the trade-off. Now, if the employer wants to say that, look, you know, we know how much you're making. We have to report a certain amount based on your credit card receipts or whatever to the IRS for tax purposes. We need to be able to share some with the cooks and the bartenders and a number of restaurant groups
have in the last year or two decided they're going to get rid of tips altogether and pay a higher wage.
Right.
I think that's a trend that's going in the right direction, but I don't know if it's going to be widespread anytime soon.
If you're just joining us, we're in the break room. You just heard Howard Franklin, Democratic strategist, also Kalina Bowler of the Credits Podcast, Greg Williams of the show Greg's List, and Natalie Pavelski of Cater Communications. All right, I'm sure there's none of these here, but do you have any grown-up children still living in your house?
Can we turn our beds into bunk beds? And here's the thing, it'll give us so much extra space in our room to do activities.
Please say yes.
You don't need permission from us to build bunk beds. You're adults. You can do what you want.
So...
Yes,
sweet.
You can make bunk beds.
I knew it. This is the funnest night ever.
Personal finance site NerdWallet finds 80% of American parents now pay for at least part of their adult children's living expenses. And that adds up to about $227,000 in lost retirement savings. Is it okay to support an adult kid?
I think most parents expect to support a kid for a little while at least. I mean, well, till they're done college. And I think it's hard to get launched these days. I don't think it's a problem if your kid is retraining or lost their job and trying to find a new one, like as long as they have a strategy for supporting themselves at some point. I think the problem happens if you have a long-term sponge who's not trying to find a job, isn't in school, isn't contributing to the household. I don't think you're helping. I think you're hurting.
I agree with that. And I think I'd be curious to know what that percentage was 10 or 15 years ago. I got some siblings that I know, you know, have sponged. Thankfully, they're not in the state of Georgia, so they're not listening right now.
This is national, Howard.
You know we're a podcast, right?
You're in trouble, Howard.
This is like a something that happens just for millennials or something that just happened after this recession. I think it's something that has long been the case. And I bet that number, that 80%, probably hovered pretty near a similar number 20 years ago, a generation ago.
I'm actually interested in wondering what would it be like, what are the statistics when you're talking about adult children where you have, you know, 30-something-year-olds taking care of parents who are still of working age but for whatever reason can't work or whatever, and like they're living with them. And so the younger person's retirement savings are also at risk.
I would imagine
I think there's some give and take.
Number.
And I mean, you know, when
you'll be surprised,
When they changed the health care law and added, you know, children to be able to stand to age of 26 when they really should be getting their own health care at 21 or whenever they start, in theory, getting out to the workforce, I think that has contributed to the malaise as well.
Actually, I was on my parents' health care until I was 25 or so, but it had nothing to do with the law, because I'm 38 now, so well before Barack Obama was the president. Mm-hmm. It was the policy of the employer to say, hey, we'll keep kids on as long as you want. So,
and
I was an entrepreneur, so I didn't
offer.
Have health care insurance. I literally, it worked out until I turned 25.
But you weren't living in the parents' basement?
Oh, no, I lived 800 miles away. But, yeah.
Yeah. OK, Okay. Well, we'd love to get your opinions on there for all you out there listening. Maybe some of you are supporting an adult child of some kind.
Or living with your parents.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know how to reach us, 404-500-9457, or find us on social media. Okay. After allegations of sexual assault were made against Senator Al Franken, he has answered those calls to resign. Also, Democratic Senator John Conyers resigned after similar accusations were made against him. But we've got this Alabama Judge Roy Moore facing child abuse allegations, still running for the U.S. Senate, still supported by the Republicans and by our president. Will we see sort of a reflection in the Republican Party that we've seen in the Democratic Party? And Greg, we got to start with you.
Oh, why is that? They're already. I mean, Jeff Flake,
of Arizona,
a senator of the Arizona, he's not going to be running for re-election, but he wrote a $100 contribution for a U.S. Senate race. And Howard, you're in politics. You know how generous of a donation that really is for a U.S. Senate. But I mean, Roy Moore is already controversial on the Republican side. I will distinguish. He has denied the allegations. The other folks that were mentioned, none of them, Al Franken denied it, and his interesting, he said he will resign in a few weeks. I still think he left the door open to not actually resign. But Roy Moore is going to come in under a cloud, and frankly, I think they'll probably try to show him the door because they're going to worry about the Me Too movement and the longevity of that and the war on women that the Democrats are going to be recycling again.
Yeah, war on women.
Yeah. That's the mantra they've been using against Republicans for a long time.
Well, sometimes the shoe fits. I mean, I'm tired of the Republicans and the Democrats playing a different roles here. That's what's got me a little concerned. And it's hard because you don't want to engage in Me Too-ism, right? You can't look at Roy Moore or the Groper-in-Chief and say that because what they did is worse, Al Franken shouldn't have resigned. That's wrong. What Al did was wrong. Mm-hmm. He needs to go. But it's asymmetrical warfare. You know what I mean? It's like all the Democrats who get caught out are encouraged by their party to leave. And we're not seeing the same thing on the Republican
side. That is a new development. Bill Clinton had years of allegations.
Look, that's 1990s. We're talking now. Okay. Now is now.
Okay.
And so we're looking at, look at where we are now. We have the National Party saying, Al Franken, you got to leave. And not just a few. The majority of the Democratic caucus said, you got to go. We don't have the same thing on the Republican side.
Although,
they see it differently.
To be fair, that could be a political strategy to make the Republicans look bad.
You give up a seat right now? I mean, I wouldn't.
The seat I'm in?
I won't kick you out.
Listen, John Conyers is my congressman growing up. It may very well be a political strategy, but at the end of the day, it's still the right thing to do.
Well, there's the moral side.
Yeah. I mean, it has the benefit of being the right thing to do. And I think if you look at these two parties and how one is coddling, a perceived and accused, not only a groper, but someone who is targeting young girls, right? I think there's a totally different expectation of what this party would allow for Roy Moore. I think it's deplorable that they would stand up behind him and say, we still want to see him elected to the U.S. Senate. I think it's incredible that in this day and age, that's still possible. And I'm curious to know, Greg, you mentioned them not seating him. I think if he wins this seat, I think he gets seated. I don't imagine that they go back against the will of the voters and say, hey, we're not going to seat
him. They'll seat him, but then they can put him up for ethics investigation. There's a lot of tools in what they can do. What they don't want to do is disenfranchise the voters in Alabama. And right or wrong, they made the choice when they picked him over Luther Strange. And then Doug Jones is obviously the Democrat in there. And at this stage, there's really not a whole lot they can do. They can't really remove him from the ballot.
They cannot support him.
Well, they could stop spending Republican money.
Well, what they want to do strategically is get a Republican in there, get him out of office, and then the governor will be able to appoint
exactly.
his successor. So that's strategy as well, too.
So. I love
going
that
back
word.
To a further one.
Thank you, George W.
let's move on to a slightly, I guess, not really happier subject, but lighter, maybe. He was born Jasper Newton Daniel. Most Americans know him as Jack.
After I get a little bit of courage from my old friend, Mr. Jack Daniels. Mrs. Daniels? Mrs. Daniels? Is Jack in? What? Oh, my God, when? Oh, I am so sorry. Poor old Jack. He was a wise man, but he just loved playing with that wheat thresher. Always playing with that wheat thresher.
Okay, so it turns out Jack Daniels was maybe not such a great guy. The recipe for his famous whiskey actually belonged to a slave named Nearest Green. And apparently Jack claimed it for himself, because in those days you didn't have to pay a slave for anything. I guess that's what slavery means. Anyone surprised by this?
Nope. Not surprised at all. This is par for the course. And as we go through time and we're able to look back and, you know, be introspective, we're going to find, you know, what really happened. And
spoiler, Eli Whitney also didn't invent the cotton gin.
That's true.
I think we need to investigate Colonel Sanders at KFC as well. I don't think that original recipe is his either.
Well, I will say in Jack Daniel's defense, not that I need any more reasons to drink Jack Daniel's at all, but watching the video story, I mean, it looks like they have embraced the
right.
origin story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they talked about his approach to wages and fairness back then. And apparently he paid his black and white employees the same wage. It was all based on seniority, et cetera. So I don't think it's all bad. I don't, you know, having not grown up in that time, I have some feelings about it. But but yeah, I think it's a relatively heartening story from the corporate standpoint that they did not try to bury this story
right.
and try to make it something that it ultimately
it's
wasn't.
A very American story. I mean, aren't there are a million stories like this of hidden
exactly.
contributions
right.
by people who didn't get credit. And I agree with Howard. I think what the company is doing is sort of interesting. They're having special editions of Nearest Green whiskey and they're incorporating him into the official corporate history. I think that's the right way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, there's so many of those. It was a black man who invented the filament that goes inside Dallas Edison's bulb, all those kind of things. Fascinating history.
George
that
Washington
has been lost.
Carver invented a ton of things. So.
Yeah, he was the peanut guy. Anyhow, we're out of time in the break room today. I want to say thank you to all my guests, Natalie Pavelski of Cater Communications, Kalina Baller of the Credits Podcast, Greg Williams of the radio show Greg's List, and Howard Franklin, Democratic strategist. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Celeste. Everybody stay safe on the road.
Drive safely.
Drive very carefully, people.
We do want to hear from all of you. We talked earlier about tipping. Do you think waiters should be allowed to keep all their tips? And should we get rid of tips altogether? You know how to reach us on Facebook or Twitter, or call and leave a message. For today and for the week, that is On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a safe and great weekend.